Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack, and today our guest is Alex Kingman, and she is the Director of Investor Relations at KGI Capital, and KGI Capital invests in 20 to 100 unit distressed multifamily properties and redevelopment properties in the Southeast and Midwest. To date, they've acquired 253 multifamily units and have over $30 million in assets under management. And before going full-time into real estate, she was one of the top Airstream salesperson in the country. And she's located currently in San Francisco and is mother of two girls. So Alex, welcome to the show. Welcome. And how are you doing today?
Doing awesome. Thank you, Eileen. I'm really excited to be here.
So Alex, can you share a little bit more about your background and how did you get into the world of real estate?
Sure. So it started out, I guess you could say it started out like in eighth grade, but I didn't really get into real estate until I was about 20. In eighth grade, I read a book and it was one of Robert Kiyosaki's books. It was like the last book that I hadn't read on the shelf. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll read this. We're going on a road trip. Like, fine. It ended up being an amazing book. And it was like, it came with like the cash flow for kids game, I think. So it was like raising your child's financial IQ or some like random Robert Kiyosaki book, and ended up being completely changing the trajectory of my life. And I decided I wanted to be a business owner and an investor and go that route instead of what I had always planned for myself up until that point, or assumed, I guess, which was to get a good paying job and, you know, save up and retire early kind of thing. So for me, it made more sense to go into the business and investing world. And once I was a little bit older and able to, I started to invest in real estate. And at the time, my partner and I were living together and he wanted to buy a house. And I said, I'm not buying any type of house unless it's an investment, because I don't want a mortgage that I have to be, I guess, tied to forever. So we decided to do a house hack. And we bought a 3-bed, 2-bath house with a studio 300 square foot granny unit that was on the property as well. And there was a garage that connected to it. So we lived in the studio granny unit with our 5-year-old and rented out the main house and converted that studio into a 2-bed, 1-bath house unit. And so that's how we got started. And then from there it grew. You know, we went out of state because we liked real estate investing, but we decided that California wasn't really where we wanted to be investing more in the residential space. And went out of state, did some 1-4 unit properties out there and invested in those, and then went into bigger properties after that. We're in the real estate space in the multifamily area. So,
so I'm curious, as an eighth grader, when you were reading Robert Kiyosaki's book, what kind of stood out to you? And did it really like click as an eighth grader? And was it written in a way that, you know, stood out? Like, what stood out to you as an eighth grader that stuck?
Yeah, I think that it was written, the concepts in it were simple enough that I understood them. And it was written in a way for parents to teach these concepts to their kids. So it was explained in a way that a kid could understand. So that was really helpful for me. And then when I didn't understand anything, I would ask my dad questions about it, and he would kind of explain what it meant or whatever the case may be. And so I think some of the main, I guess, epiphanies in there for me were probably similar to what a lot of people say when they talk about Rich Dad Poor Dad, but having your money work for you instead of you working for money, and investing so that you can, you know, have the tax benefits and have the, I guess, financial freedom to be able to do more with your life and be able to, yeah, basically just have the life freedom. You know, once you have the financial freedom, you can go and have that that lifestyle or whatever that you want to have.
So when you and your partner decided at that time to buy an investment property, was he on board with the whole living in the granny unit, converting the other one, renting it out? Or did you have to do more convincing and educating on your part?
He was actually super on board. He just wanted to buy a house, so he was cool with it.
In the San Francisco area?
Yeah, so a couple hours south in Hollister. So yeah, I guess it's like 2 hours without traffic. And yeah, he was on board. He has been in the construction industry for quite a while, so it was not a big deal to do that and to go and fix it up and live in it while we were fixing it up. Not that I would necessarily do it exactly the same as we did now. We'd probably fix it up quickly and then live in it. But, you know, you live and you learn.
So what about the landlording aspect of it, especially living on the same unit as, you know, the tenant that you're renting it out to? How was that aspect of it, finding the tenant, leasing it out, and then being on the same property?
Yeah, that was, I definitely had to learn some things. So I actually read, and I still go by that book quite a bit. I read, it's Brandon Turner's book. I think it's just like Managing Rental Properties. I'm pretty sure that's the title. And I just followed like everything that it said in that book, pretty much to the T. And it's worked out really well. I personally was managing the property, actually still personally manage it. But it was still a learning curve, you know, just figuring out what to price the rental at, figuring out how to show the property, what the process was, how to market it, and who really is the target type of a resident that would want to live there. So it took me a couple months to get it rented out. I think it took me like maybe 4 or 5 months. It took a while. But once I figured it out, it was like, okay, you know, it just took a little bit, a couple reps.
So then after that, after you did finally get it rented out, were you managing the properties on your own?
Yes, I was managing this, just this one. And then when we bought more out of state, we had property managers for those.
Okay. So when you went out of state, what made the decision? Was it a challenge to operate or live in California, but then purchase out of state and then manage an out of state property at that time?
We liked California. But we didn't like the landlord-tenant laws that are here because it is much more favorable to the tenants, which just creates more risk from an investment standpoint for us. And we didn't really want to continue to build a larger portfolio here with additional risk of that amount. So that, and then also the numbers, just like, you know, for the properties to cash flow and that kind of thing made more sense elsewhere. And mainly those things. And then just like other states are more tax friendly and that kind of thing as well. So we decided to go to Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, and then Northern Indiana for our smaller 1 to 4 unit properties. Those were good moves. I really like those markets.
And at that time, when you were starting out buying out of state, was that just on your own or were you also partnering and bringing in other partners into these deals as well?
We were buying them with our own money. And then after we did a few, we did partner with people that we knew who were interested, but they didn't want to really be super involved in the day-to-day. And so... yeah, but we started out with our own money, which was good, I think, because we learned our lessons on our own dime, which meant that we weren't risking other people's capital to do that.
And then from there, what did you do after you bought a couple of properties in Indiana, Florida? Did you continue buying it? And then how did you continue and transition into the larger multis?
I think we got to a point where we realized that to hit our goals for our company and for our investment goals, we wanted to go bigger and also for economy of scale, having everything under one roof or, you know, one property instead of spread out is much more efficient. And we just liked that better. So we decided to just move into that space. We had also some people who were interested in partnering with us on deals to the point where we figured it would just make more sense to go into a bigger deal and bring them all into one in like a syndication model instead of trying to, you know, individually partner with people and all that. So it just made more sense by then. It kind of was a slow progression of what made sense as we went along.
So what kind of properties are you focused on today?
So today we're focused on distressed apartment communities. And I guess the distressed aspect of it has always been our focus, or at least some type of heavy value add. So even with our first property, we did, you know, we remodeled and kind of like added on to our own unit. And then when we would go out of state to these other, to invest in these other properties that were smaller at first, those were almost all distressed properties that needed like quite a bit of work. Like they weren't really livable sometimes when we bought them. So really putting in that elbow grease has always been something that we've really focused in on, because that's where my partner's area of expertise is. And so it just made sense to continue into that with larger properties. So that's what we're focused on now. We just look for 20 to 100 unit apartment buildings that need a lot of work, especially if it's a physical value add type of situation. And then I guess in addition to that, we've also been trying to expand that heavy value add or distressed construction component to also include some redevelopment type of deals as well.
So sometimes when you hear heavy value add and distressed properties, you kind of associate it with a little bit more risk. Can you share about a little bit about some of the risks that's involved when you're doing these types of deals? But at the same time, on the other hand, what are some of the upside? Because you're buying at a heavy discount for these properties, so there are some positive upsides as well. Can you share both sides of the coin for us?
Sure. That is very true. Sometimes when I tell people what we do, they get really scared, they, you know, but before you get scared away, there are definitely some upsides and there are definitely some risks. So I guess risk would be, first off, if you're not experienced in that kind of strategy with, you know, heavy rehabs, that's a big risk right up front. Like maybe start small and then go into bigger properties or partner with people who have done it before, who have that experience. Because the most expensive part of like not knowing is that you don't know what you don't know. And it's way too easy to lose your shirt. And also if you have investors lose their money on a deal if you're not experienced in it. So I think if you're a passive investor, having an experienced sponsor is really, really important. Who's specifically experienced in distress area. If you're doing it actively, having the experience or partnering. So that's a big risk, I would say. I'd say maybe the other one is that because it is so dilapidated, if it's that distressed, typically there's a really low occupancy. A lot of times there's also like management may or may not be great. Probably isn't. But sometimes it can be the owner of the building that's causing, you know, just not really working well with the management team. So, but a lot of times management is something that you have to maybe replace and find a team that's willing to work with you to bring the property from where it is now to operating efficiently, which takes a lot of work, because a lot of times when properties are this distressed, they have maybe not the best residents there at the moment. Maybe they're not paying, or maybe they're, you know, selling drugs or whatever the case may be. So finding a good management team who is also experienced in working with these types of properties is really important, because some management teams don't specialize in this and they may not know how to turn something like that around. So very important. I would say those two are definitely big risks. When it comes to benefits, there definitely are some really good benefits. So the main one is that, yes, you can buy these for deep discounts. And there's a lot of equity to be made, a lot of profit to be made on these types of properties. So typically, if you're looking at something like this, for example, as a passive investor, you know, you can see a lot of times like 2.5, sometimes even 3x your money in like 5 to 7 years. Obviously that's not like a promise, but that's, you know, what we look for when we look for deals. And that's not necessarily something you're going to see with your typical like paint the cabinets type of value add where you just kind of like add a backsplash and then you're done. But they're definitely higher returns in that regard. And you can see the returns come to you. And then also the other benefits would be that you're, it's not necessarily like a cash flow type of deal. It's much more of an equity play. So if you're trying to grow your equity quickly, this is definitely something that would, you know, be something you'd want to look into.
So for you, your focus primarily is the investor relations side of things and the capital raising. So where has it been the best place for you to start meeting different types of investors, especially ones who are interested in these kinds of deals?
I've found a lot of them through actually networking in person in my area, and then also online and through different groups, the groups aren't anything like, I know there are a lot of mentorship programs and stuff out there, but I've just focused on talking to people at just casual meetups. And that's worked really well. Also, let's see, sometimes podcasts, I like to, you know, come on and talk, and sometimes people will reach out that way. And then I guess sometimes on LinkedIn, because I'll be sharing things there and people will reach out, or I'll reach out to somebody that I see that, you know, has been chatting with me or whatever the case may be. So I've found those to be really beneficial.
So what's your typical like process once you meet someone, let's say at a meetup, you meet them for the first time, what's the process that you usually use, or how do you maintain the relationship up until the point where you have a deal and you reach out to see whether or not they would be interested in partnering?
Yeah. So typically I guess first just ask them like, hey, you know, if it's from a meetup or something like that, that I've met them, I'll just ask them if it's something that they'd be interested in talking more about. And if yes, then I would just set up a call. Typically, I just try to set up a call one-to-one to mainly to discuss what their goals are and, you know, where they see themselves trying to go with their investments, where they see themselves in the next few years and long-term as well. And also just to make sure it's a good fit. And then we also typically go over, at that time, it's also, I guess, important time for me to make sure that they understand what this type of investment is and how it works, and that they're, I guess, qualified and that they're sophisticated, at least, or also accredited, or both. And if not, then I know I can share more information with them to help them get to the point where they can invest in one of these deals. And if so, then I know I can, you know, just continue to build that relationship and eventually start sharing different investment opportunities that we have with them. So typically that first call is really important. And then after that, I usually just continue to share as much good information as I can through email. I have a really good weekly email, and we try to just educate and share what we've been up to as well, and just share anything that could be really helpful for passive investors. And then, yeah, really that, and then, you know, keeping in touch with them, building that relationship. We really want to build like deep relationships with our investors, not just know a million people and just email blast everyone when we have a deal, but really have, I guess, know each investor and their, and have their best interests at heart when we are looking for deals. And also when we share them, knowing that, hey, this is a really good deal for you because these were your goals that you told me. And I think that this will help you get to that goal. Typically, that's kind of the process, like call and then continue to connect with them over time, and then share deals when we have them, when it makes sense.
So Alex, what's next for you? What's your next focus?
Yeah, we've been actually working on just digging deep into distressed properties. So just focusing in on just a few markets and trying to just dominate those markets. I guess some of the mentors that I have become very successful by doing that. And so that's something that we are really focusing on this year. And we continue to just grow that. We've been continuing to grow our investor base, and really just growth at this point is definitely a goal of ours. So we've just been focused on that.
And how has real estate investing impacted your life, Alex?
Oh, I think it's really impacted like every area of my life. personally, I mean, it has allowed me to live a lifestyle that works well for me. I'm able to see my kids a lot more. Before I was in real estate, I was one of the top salespeople at Airstream, which is like the silver travel trailers. And I really enjoyed it there, but it was like I was making good money and I was enjoying my work, but it was like I didn't ever have time to like enjoy the money I made. And I didn't ever have time to spend time with my kids and family. And that was something that I decided after a while that it wasn't worth the amount of time I was missing. So real estate has allowed me to be able to have both, have the fulfilling investing and career and work on something that really is something that I'm really passionate about, and also have the family and the time with my kids. So that's been huge for me. It's impacted how we teach our kids about money and investing and working. I feel like it's just really been every aspect, really.
And if there's one thing you know now about real estate that you wish you knew when you first started, what would that be?
That's a good question. I think really probably just keeping it simple, not trying to do too many things at once. And I think just digging in on like a strategy that you're good at, like what are your strengths, and just digging deep on that, not trying to try a bunch of different things. That at least for us has been really, really good. And something that in the beginning, we were just so excited and, it was like shiny object syndrome. We stayed pretty on track, but it was always like, oh, maybe we should do this or maybe we should do that. Instead of just being like, nope, we're focused. We're doing this one strategy. It's always exciting to try something new, right? But I think just focusing in is really important.
And what is the one thing that sets the successful people apart in real estate investing?
Really, I think just continuing, like keeping on going. If you're already investing in real estate and you have a goal, it's just going to take time to get there. And I think sometimes people get discouraged because it's exciting in the beginning and it's exciting to hit your goal, but the middle it's kind of like drudgery sometimes. And maybe that's what they call the grind, but you know, sometimes it can be tough right in the middle and it feels like nothing's happening. But I think that's when you got to dig in deeper. I think that's when you need to focus and just keep going. And that's, I think, a big thing that sets people apart.
So Alex, where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. I share things there. And then also our website is a good place to go. We have resources there for passive investors. We have a spot where you can set up a time to chat with me if you'd like, and we can learn more about each other that way. So I'd say those are the two best ways to connect. And I would love to connect with any of you. I'd be happy to help in any way I can.
Awesome. Alex, thank you so much for all of your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, this has been awesome. I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.